Good morning. How's everyone? Yeah, you can clap again. That deserves another clap. Well, how's everyone today? Good? Good, good, good. Can you guys believe it's August already? Isn't that something? We don't need to talk about that. All right, we'll just pretend it's still July somehow. No, but it is hard to believe August is already here. It's been a great summer. I hope that you have had a great summer. Mine has been really good. In fact, my summer sort of took me, it was a very full summer for me. It took me all over the place. It took me to Wisconsin, St. Louis, California, and then this past week, for unfortunate reasons, I had to go down to Texas. A good friend of mine, his father passed away very suddenly a few days ago, and so I went down to just be with him for the funeral, and then came right back. But one of my biggest highlights was being in California for about 12 days. I was had the chance a couple weeks ago, as most of you know, to speak at a wonderful church called New Song Church, where a friend of mine, Dave Gibbons, who you guys probably remember, has been here before, was at New Song, great, great community there. And then a few days later, I was in downtown LA at a conference called Origins, which was at the Nokia Center, which is like the coolest venue in the universe. It's where they do American Idol, and they tried to get me to try out for that, and I was like, I don't know, I'm kind of busy, but but anyway, so there were a few hundred of us that gathered, just really centered around Jesus, humanity, and innovation, and there were some great, great people there with me, and in fact, Erwin McManus was there, Dave Gibbons, Blake McCoskey. If you've ever heard of Tom's Shoes, Blake is the founder of Tom's Shoes, and then Scott Harrison from Charity Water, and it was just a great, great conversation, and then a few days later, I was in San Diego. Which San Diego is a great place. Why doesn't everyone live there? I'm almost certain San Diego needs an Orchard West, right? That would work, right? I was in San Diego with a group of global leaders who make up what's known as the New Song Alliance, and these were leaders who are from Mexico City, London, Bangkok, New York, India, Brazil, Chicago, and some other places, I forgot where. But anyway, it's good to be away, but really, really good to be back. And man, I've missed you guys, and it's good to be back with you today. I'm looking forward to sharing more in the weeks ahead. And of course, this is always an exciting weekend to come back, because this obviously is barbecue and not communion. I think Damien said barbecue and communion, but it's actually barbecue. That would be really interesting, though. I don't know how we'd work that exactly, but I don't know, maybe next year we'll have to try to work that in somehow. Anyway, so we got our barbecue and baptism, where we barbecue people and then we baptize them. And it's very, very touching time. No, but you know, hey, this is a party weekend, okay? And those of you who've never been a part of a barbecue and baptism at the Orchard, you're in for a real treat, okay? We really believe this is a celebration. And I don't know how many people now, 70-something people are going to be getting baptized today. And many of you here are included in that group, and you've decided that you want to publicly declare your faith in Jesus. And so that's really reason to celebrate. That's a big deal, okay? In fact, if you have your Bibles, I want to show you a quick scripture, and then we're going to move on to some conversations. But if you have your Bibles, I want to go to Psalm chapter 40, because this has been a passage that's been sort of just in my mind and heart these last few days, and I think this really sums up what's happening. In fact, look, can we read it together? You guys have your... You guys want to read with me? Even if you don't, I'm going to ask you to anyway, okay? Psalm 40, let's read. I waited patiently for the Lord to help me. That's so hard, by the way, isn't it right there? Woo! Okay, I just had to say that. I waited patiently for the Lord to help me. Let's read together. And he turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. Let me just stop there for a second. This past week, I saw this image of... I don't know actually what it's called. There's an official name for it, but it's like a mud baptism that is a part of the it's a voodoo practice, and these people get baptized in the mud. And when I looked at that, I just thought to myself, there's something really wrong with this picture, because that's actually what God takes us out of, right? He takes us out of the mud. He takes us out of the muck and the mire, and our image of baptism is so much more beautiful than being baptized in mud, right? Let's keep reading. Let's read verse 2 again together. Ready? He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. Verse 3, he has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Listen, many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. I love that. Some of you, that sounds familiar to you, not because it's in the Bible, but because it's the basis of a song that Bono wrote called 40. You remember that song, U2? I will sing a new song. Yeah, no U2 fans here, apparently. You guys are lame. Seriously, no U2 fans. Come on now. Goodness, great. No, seriously, any U2 fans here? Okay, the rest of you, pray for you. What are you guys, like in a country music or something? Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. But I love this because I love how it says, he has given me a new song to sing. And some of you are singing that new song. You're singing the song of hope. And I love where it says, many will see what he has done and they'll be amazed. And I think that's what's going to happen today. Many are going to see what God has done and they'll be amazed. And as a result of that, they will put their trust in the Lord. And there's people around you in your life, and hopefully they see something that has happened in you as a follower of Christ. And they've seen you become a better person. And they've seen a shift in your heart. And not to say that you're perfect or that you never make mistakes, but now you're just willing to be honest about it, right? You're willing to acknowledge it, and you're willing to make things right when you do wrong. But there should be something in you that when they see you, they're amazed at what God has done. And as a result, they put their trust in the Lord. And I just think that's going to happen today. So this past week, as I was reading through some of these baptism stories, and this is just always gets me every year, you know, these stories are just amazing. But as I begin to read through these stories of the people who are getting baptized, I just kind of felt like, you know what, rather than teach a sermon today, because, you know, I have a lot of more other weeks ahead that we can do that, I would rather invite some of those who are going to be getting baptized to share their story and give you a chance to get to know some of them, because I just think it's going to be even sweeter when you're standing at the edge of that pool today and you know some of these stories. And I wish we had time for all the stories, seriously, because they're all so unique and they're all important. Unfortunately, we don't have time for that. But I do have a handful of people here today that I've asked to share a little bit about their journey and where God has brought them. And I want you actually right now to welcome with me Matt, Tim, Jesse, and Jenny to the stage. Would you welcome these guys? Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Come on up. You guys have no idea how hard it is and challenging to get up here and talk in front of everyone. So they're a little bit nervous, and which we can't blame them, right? So, but you're cool. This is family. So, you know, family. Which I don't know if that's a good analogy to use or not, but we're good family. Anyway, thank you guys for being with us today. And what I did was I asked these guys to take and summarize their spiritual journeys using 4, 5, or 6 words that would kind of describe this journey that you guys have been on in your lives. And I have a feeling what's going to happen as you hear their stories, you're going to see part of your own story in one of theirs. And there's probably going to be part of their story that sort of ignites something in your heart. And so I want to encourage you to really open your heart over these next few minutes. And anyway, Matt, I want to begin with Matt Hensley. Matt is a guy that I've gotten to know. I mean, I've known you probably for a while, but over this past year, and under some interesting scenario that took place. But before we go there, let me just back up. Your mom and dad, actually, this is really interesting. My father officiated his parents' wedding 25 years ago. Yeah, isn't that cool? And so his parents basically would just come to church twice a year. They were Christers, Christmas and Easter. And so about a little over a year ago, in fact, it was a year ago, Mother's Day, you guys all showed up at church, and that did something inside of your parents. Like, God began to work inside your parents, especially your dad, because he really needed it. I'm just kidding. He's here. Is he here? Is Jerry here? Is he here? Sorry. Oh, yeah. It's true, isn't it, Jerry, right? So anyway, why don't you tell us a little about that? Because a little bit you shared last night, a little bit about how you guys, even though your reasoning, it was good reasoning to come to church, but tell everyone why you chose.
It was Mother's Day last year, and it was Saturday, and my mom said to my dad and me, I'm going to church tomorrow with your grandma, and my grandma's here pretty much every weekend. And she said,
Connie Borjan. Connie here?
No. And so she said, I'm going to church with your grandma. My mom has 5 sisters, and all my sisters are going to be there. So me and my dad were like, we probably should go. We really don't want to, but let's make mom and grandma happy, so it'll be good. So
wise man, right? Yeah.
So we came to church, and we sat there and listened and paid attention, and it was for the first time I actually went to church that I was like, wow, it was actually really good. I think I learned something. So then the next week came, and it was Saturday night, and I'm like, hey, Dad, how about tomorrow we go to church? We'll make Mom happy. We'll voluntarily go. You know, we'll be looking good tomorrow night. You know, we'll maybe get some dinner or something. It'll be great.
Mom will pull out the good recipes.
Yeah, something good. And so we came to church and had a great time, learned some more things, and three weeks in a row, we came on our own voluntarily.
And so God started, you guys really just started feeling God was doing something great in your hearts, and it was interesting, because, you know, sometimes when, you know, you make a decision to do the right thing, it seems like the greatest amount of trouble shows up in your life. Have you ever noticed that? You know, it's not always come to know Christ and now everything's going to be perfect. That's just not, in fact, it's usually not that way. And you guys experienced that to the nth degree because tragedy hit your family just weeks after you guys made the decision to get serious about God. Why don't you share what happened?
So after coming here for 3 weeks, it was a Saturday morning, and I just bought a motorcycle 2 months earlier and was headed on 294 North for a ride up to Milwaukee. And I didn't make it to Milwaukee. I was in a very, very bad accident in Gurnee. I had to get airlifted to the hospital. I don't remember any of it. The last thing I remember is being on 294 North and waking up 10 days later in Lutheran General Hospital.
Your mom got a phone call, every mom's worst nightmare, and that you had been in a terrible accident. Your girlfriend was actually saw the entire thing happen. She was behind you in a vehicle, right? And yeah, go ahead.
It actually, she was on the phone with my parents as I hit, what had happened is I hit the cement wall. There was construction, so there's no shoulder. So I hit the cement barrier, and so she was actually on the phone with my mom as I crashed into the cement wall. And so my parents, they were very concerned, and they were, my dad just being the man and trying to be the strong one. Well, you know, at least they haven't called a helicopter. He's not getting airlifted, so it can't be that bad. It's bad, but it can't be that bad. And then within 3 minutes, the paramedics were there, and they had taken the phone from my girlfriend and told my parents that they were calling, they were going to call Flight for Life. I needed to get airlifted to the hospital, and if they wanted to see their son alive again, they should get to the hospital soon because I might not make it there.
And that's when I got the phone call. Your mom or dad, I forgot who it was, called me up, and they obviously were very concerned. And so I ran down to the hospital, and it was interesting because I remember talking to your parents, maybe even on the way there, and I think they were saying how their hope was, A, that you would make it, you'd be alive. And then when they found out that you were alive, it was like the next grasp of hope was that you would have brain function. And then it was like once they knew you had brain function, it was just one step at a time. It was a really intense few days. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about what injuries what happened there?
It was, my main injury was that I lost all of my quad muscle out of my left leg. My kneecap was completely off. I had no helmet on. All the bones around my eye were shattered. I fractured the back of my skull. I had severe brain bleeding to the point where I had blood coming out of my ears. I didn't even know that was possible, and I was bleeding out of my ear.
You really should not have made it. I mean, this was pretty awful. And then just the process of recovery here was pretty intense, wasn't it?
It was quick. They told me when I started waking up, I would remember things, but then the next day I wouldn't remember what I did the day before, who I talked to, what I did. And so they thought I might have permanent brain damage. Thankfully, I don't. The main injury was, like I said, my leg, and so I had to have a skin graft actually over my leg. So until I got the skin graft, I didn't look at my leg. I was always in bandages, so I never knew how bad it was. I knew I had a road rash, but not to the degree that it was. And then one day the doctor was in there and he
Road rash just sounds so minor, doesn't it? Diaper rash or something.
Not bad. You know, like you could put a Band-Aid on it.
Baby screeches a little bit, but I mean, you know, get over it. Anyway. Sorry. But this was bad.
It was bad. It was real bad. And so I had to change. I was in ACE wraps and an immobilizer from my tip of my toes all the way up to my waist. And they had to change him, and there was a nurse's assistant, and she was younger, and she said, oh, well, I'll help. They needed extra hands, so she offered to help. And the doctor got all the ACE wraps off, and all of a sudden she got really pale, and she sat down in the chair, and I was like, hey, aren't you supposed to be helping? And then next thing I know, she got up and, like, made a beeline for the door. I was hoping that we were done, but I knew we weren't because there was my leg. And no sooner than she got to the door, boom, she passed out, hit the ground, and now she needed immediate care.
So I got to ask you, though, like, did you take a peek at your leg after that? Like, I got to look at this.
Kind of. I actually waited. I waited until after that because they were like, hey, you've been here for 3.5 weeks. You smell, so we're going to give you a shower instead of sponge baths.
Yeah.
So then my dad's like, if you're going to get in the shower, you should probably look at your leg. That way you're not standing there in the shower naked and crying. And I'm like, all right, that's probably not going to be a good situation. So I looked at it a couple days later, and my honest first words were, well, I cried first, and the doctors were, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And I was like, are you kidding me? It looks like a half-eaten turkey leg.
Okay, let's pause there because we actually have some photos. Now, these are if you're easily grossed out, don't look at these, okay? But can we?
We'll get y'all. Yeah.
Go ahead. There's one.
That's my knee, actually.
Oh yes, of course. That's a knee. Yeah. Wow.
And that's the bottom of my leg.
Is that what it looked like when you saw it, or did it look worse?
Way worse. A little bit worse. Yeah, I was, like, you can kind of see, like, how it's, like, got, like it's grated and, like, the crisscross. And I'm like, oh, you guys put, like, steel mesh on my leg, like, to hold the skin graft on. And the lady goes, no. She goes, that's your skin. We have to grind it through this machine, and then we slap it on there.
Okay, like, that's enough. Seriously.
Right, that's cool.
I haven't had no breakfast today, which is actually probably good. Wow. So, tell me about and share with us. One of the words you wrote down was decision. What did that mean?
My last week in the hospital, I was on the rehab floor, and they sent a social worker in to talk to me, and I was confused. I had never talked to a social worker in my life. I was always a happy kid for the most part. And then social worker shows up, and she introduces herself, and we talk for a quick second. And then she says, I have to ask you a question. She said, do you ever have any suicidal thoughts, or do you ever want to harm yourself? And I looked at this lady, and I was so confused. I said, are you kidding me? I said, I'm the happiest person to be alive right now. I said, I should be dead, and God wants me here, so luckily I'm still here. I said, why would you ask that question? She said, well, when people have tragic events in their life, they go one of two ways. Either they go the way you've obviously went, and they're just happy to be alive. No matter what, how your leg looks or what you're able to do and not do, they're happy to be alive and to be here. And then there's the people who go the other way, and they get suicidal thoughts. They think God hates them. They think he's punishing them for something that they did, and now he's going to scar them forever and permanently. Mm-hmm. And they want to take that anger out on themselves and do things they shouldn't do.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I see that as a pastor all the time, people who are going through tragedy, that it either does do one of those two things. Oftentimes, it either draws people closer, and their reliance upon God becomes greater, and their faith in God becomes greater, or they go the other way of just really being probably angry or bitter. And I think sometimes it's normal to have those moments when you are angry or you are questioning, but hopefully, you know, our faith, and I think that's why baptism is so important, because it's really saying, you know what, I'm ready to own my faith. I'm ready for this to be my faith, because just riding on the faith of our parents and or others or a title of a denomination we were part of, that doesn't really carry you through moments like that. And I have no doubt that the timing of this for you, God brought you and kind of got your attention a few weeks prior to this. for a reason. And it's been awesome, Matt, to see you just take steps forward in your journey. You've really taken some great. In fact, you just got back from El Salvador, where you were there working with children, and that was. Give us like just a 10-second.
It was.
Overview of that.
It was the best experience I've ever had in my life. It was wonderful to be down there and to put smiles on kids' faces, and it's a totally different world in a third world country. They're happy to have a hand to hold, you know. It's great to take what I've learned here down there and just spend time with people.
Wow. And tell us why you're getting baptized today.
It's the next step, you know. I've obviously went to El Salvador. I've started going to church, and I realized that I'm not a perfect Christian. I do things that are wrong. I do things I shouldn't do, and it's stuff that you work on. But getting baptized and making my faith public is the next step. The next thing to do.
Yeah, awesome, man. And your dad got baptized last year. Your brother got baptized, and today you're getting baptized. We're excited for you. I want to let me introduce you guys to Jesse Tampa. It's been good getting to know you a little bit here. And you gave me some you gave me some great words, and we don't have time to dive into each of these, but they're all very unique. Your first word of your story was adoption. You were adopted at 3 years old, right?
Yes.
And detachment was your second word. You said by age 13 you became detached from God and your family. And I'm leading up here to the isolation, because that's what I want you to expound on. New beginnings was another one. Getting married, having your daughter gave you a family to love and cherish. But spiritually, something was happening there, right? And tell us what isolation meant to you in your journey.
Well, isolation to me was kind of feeling like I was alone. I had been an atheist probably since I was about 14, so I didn't have any connection with God whatsoever. And as we had gotten married and moved into our new neighborhood and met, you know, all of our little families and neighborhood and their parents, you know, I started really realizing that everybody else kind of went to the same church. They all kind of felt the same way about God, and, you know, doing like small groups and getting together all the time. I didn't get it, because I wasn't at that point in my life. So the more times I had been asked, what church do you go to? Oh, how do you guys feel about this? Or, you know, really seeing how close some families were started to really bother me, I think, a little bit, that was missing from our family.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching my daughter grow up, and she would go to church with her friends, and, you know, I had a great time, and, you know, Jesus loves me, and, you know, how do you feel about God, Mom? And I'm a homeschooler, so we're used to those wonderful questions that come out of nowhere, and that was one that came out. And you know, I hated to tell her this, but I said, you know, honey, I don't believe in God. Mm. And she was like, okay, that's okay. Well, you know, and she didn't go into why, thank goodness, at that point. But anyway, I started feeling more and more like I didn't connect with people on a deeper level, because I didn't have that and couldn't share that. And it affected quite a few friendships and even one of my closest ones. So.
Well, and your life kind of turned a different direction just recently, really.
Yeah,
not even that long ago. January, right?
Yeah, the end of January.
Tell us, just give us, summarize that story for us.
You know, it was kind of out of the blue. We were going to be reading C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity for a book study. And I went into it, you know, thinking, I'll read it. And I'll basically tell everyone how they're wrong after reading it. And, you know, I got a little uncomfortable the farther I went in. And
Did you feel like, what do you mean by that? You got uncomfortable?
Uncomfortable. I started really questioning a lot, because in the beginning of the book, he basically gives the basis of why there is a God. You know, there's obviously a higher power that we base our right and wrong on, you know, and I would try and argue with it and kind of go, well, no, okay, yeah, I guess he's got a point. And about midway through the book, we got to a chapter on pride, and it was really hard for me to read, because I realized a lot of my behavior was being reflected back at me. And, you know, how pride is the greatest enmity you can have with God. And it really made me horribly uncomfortable. In fact, I went to bed that night after reading it. And when I woke up the next morning and asked my husband, I was just very rattled and feeling really uncomfortable all morning. Like, okay, you know, why am I feeling like this? And
you're feeling this conflict happening on the inside of you.
And yeah, conflict's not even a strong enough word. I felt really torn apart. And kept mulling it over and thinking about it, and really got to a point where I felt like I was at a point of decision. You know, if it's God's out there and he's offering this opportunity, and I had the choice of taking it and knowing that if I do make this choice, there's going to be stuff on the other side. But I, you know, I also had this hope of, you know what, if I give all my issues up and hand all these troubles over to God, he's going to take them. And there was that hope of maybe being free of them for the first time.
Wow. Wow. What conflict, huh? I mean, just the being torn.
Gosh, lots of things. Like I said, a lot of it with being that pride of really having pushed people away for years and always kind of put myself better than them. You know, well, they do things this way and I obviously do it better. And realizing I had really been telling people and shutting them out that they were wrong and kind of making that distance between us, and I didn't want that anymore.
Yeah. Well, you have, I really pick up from, and just the little that I know about you and James, and just James has, he'd been in a relationship with God and Christ for quite a while, and one of the things you told me early on, you know, I think you had emailed me and shared this, that James was so patient. He's here, James is here. I think that's James. You get a haircut, man. Looks good. This is James right here, and then of course your friends too with Adam and Sarah Mock, who played I think probably a huge role in this as well, just the real friendship and relationship there. But one of the things you mentioned was your husband was just so great and so patient. And can you just say, just tell me, talk about that for just a second.
Yeah, by the end of that day, I made my decision, and you know, my husband came home and I told him, and I was just so amazed by, it really hit me at that point what an amazing husband I had, who, you know, for many years had never questioned me and never pushed me and, you know, would listen to my rantings and against people and their crazy Christian beliefs and, you know, why all these small groups and stuff. And it really hit me at that point of, you know, this man loves me for who I am entirely. And it was just so wonderful to know that you have someone on your side completely like that. So
when you finally made the decision of, okay, I'm going to dive in, I'm going to surrender my life to Christ, James' response was, I told you so. No.
No.
It wasn't, was it? Not at all.
Not
it
at
was,
all.
It was.
He was so happy. In fact, you know, I'm really happy for you. And I remember this one moment because it really floored me. I had no idea what this poor man was in his own journey because I was so out there in my own mind. He said to me, he's like, just wait until you embrace Christ. He's like, that'll be the best moment ever. And it hit me that, wow, you did that? I didn't even know that. And like I said, it was just that complete detachment from everybody else and being in so my own little world. And it was just, I was like, you know what? You're right. And I can't wait.
Well, and there's so much there just for, I think, people who, because I know there's probably a lot of people here, if I didn't know there are, who maybe their spouse isn't, you know, going the same direction spiritually, and it can be very difficult, I think, you know, and so to hear that is encouraging, that you don't have to, I think we do more damage by trying to fix and trying to cram truth down people's throats or getting frustrated, and I think just the patience that James showed you, that I think that really probably drew you more than you would even know to this.
Yeah, and that was just not betray. Besides being true of him, it was, you know, it was with Adam and Sarah, especially Sarah, who we've been good friends for years, but not very close for a while because we didn't have that connection. And, you know, I kind of was afraid of that at first, that I'm going to tell friends and they're going to say, well, duh, I told you so. And nobody did. And I think I really realized how great this was and what a great path I was on now because I could take the wonderful reception I had and give it to other people.
Okay, you got to real quick share what happened this past week.
Well, you had called me on Monday to ask if I would come here and share my story, and you know, I was like, okay, you know, I'll share my story. And
people are never going to take my call ever after hearing this because they're going to know. The only reason Scott's calling me is
he wants something. And I looked at it, I was like, okay, you want me to go up there and share my story? Okay, and I was fine talking to you, and then after we hung up, it it kind of got like, okay, well, I've got to go to the store and whatever and get kind of all caught up. And I felt nervous at first because you're sitting in front of a bunch of people you don't know and have to share very personal information. But I realized I wasn't feeling very personal about it. I was actually kind of at that point where it's kind of like telling a camping story or your vacation story and, okay, here's my story, blah, 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 blah. And I think that's when God stepped in and said, no, you can't be detached from this as well. If you're going to, you're telling this story, it's not a story just of you, but it's my story and a story of hope for everybody else. Mm. So it was a very uncomfortable hour of wondering, why do I feel this way? What's going on? And calling Sarah and going, oh my gosh, I was just at the store and flipped out and crazy. And you know, finally, after really talking it through and thinking about it, realized that that's what it was that God wanted me to understand. This is a story to share with all of you that, you know, even when you're lost and in not looking for something, it might come in on you and really work on your heart. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. So I couldn't be as blasé about it as I might have thought about initially. So.
And you said you came to realization that.
Yeah, that I'm important and God loves me. I mean, he gave his only son for me. I mean, and I'm just as important as everybody else. We are all so important. There's no, you know, oh, you're just like everybody else. The fact of thinking you're ordinary. We're all very special. And I think it really hit me at that point when in getting baptized that, you know, it's God has done this for us and Christ has done this for us. And that's an awesome thing. And it's not ordinary and we're not ordinary.
And so today you're getting baptized, James.
Yes.
Being baptized too. And what do you think about that? You guys together getting baptized.
I mean, it's awesome. I think we've faced a lot together, hand in hand, and it's just one more chance for us to really be together and to take that step and declare it publicly that here we are together and we are Christ's and He's there for us. So
yeah, wow. Well, thank you for sharing with us, Jesse, and really. Interesting story and awesome to see God working in your lives. Well, let's talk to you. And thank you also for being willing to be here. And you've got a really interesting story as well. And it's just been good to get to know you and kind of see what God's been doing in you. Let me lead us up to the point where I want you to kind of talk a little bit. But your first word was foundation. You were raised in a Christian home. And you kind of, your second word was rebellion. I think like many of us, you went through that season of rebellion. You rebelled against your parents, church leaders, God, all of that. But then the third thing you wrote down was judgment, point of no return. And yeah. You shared a story that I think, could you share that with us?
Sure. Like Scott said,
hold the mic real close. There we go. I know. It's.
Like Scott said, I was raised in a really strong Christian home, and I went to church every week, multiple times a week, and I kind of just took it as this is what I do. I never really don't think I made a choice to go that I wanted to go. It was just this was something that I did every week. It was, you know, almost like going to school, going to, you know, doing the dishes. It was just this thing that I did. And as a teenager, I had an experience at church where there was a woman that we all found out she had had an affair. And during the church service, the pastor called her out and I remember it. I have this picture in my head. He pointed to her and said she was having an affair and essentially kicked her out of the church and said she wasn't welcome there.
He like called the deacons out?
He called the deacons out and they ushered her out and she was crying. And I remember just being, I guess, this feeling of like terror at the time. Like,
yeah.
That's me. I'm a sinner. I do all these horrible things.
That didn't make you really want to go to church, probably.
No. I was like, I don't want that finger pointing at me. It's going to turn right there and come to me next.
Yeah.
And this is as a teenager, and not soon after that, I did something that I felt that finger was, without even being in church, that finger was pointing at me and judging me. And I kind of felt like that was, okay, this is my point of no return. I can't go back to church after this, not only back to church, I can't I can't go back to God after this. God kind of just, I think I felt that God at this point was turning his back on me. Mm. Now, later on, I realized, no, that was me turning my back on God at that point.
And in many ways, you didn't, it seems like you didn't necessarily, though, give up on God. You did give up on church, though, for a while.
Well, I gave up on church. In the back of my mind, I always had this little voice. Do I believe? Yes, I still believe in God. I just don't want to think about it. I was searching at that point for a long time. It's been close to 20 years now I was searching for some sort of meaning in my life. I did a lot of...
You're searching all over the place.
I was searching all over. I was looking into some different, like, alternate spirituality type things. I did, you know, some meditation and some Native American spirituality, and I did... And while it felt like at the time, like, oh, this is kind of cool, it just left me feeling empty. It didn't do anything for me. And I did things like volunteer work. I did a lot of things just looking.
Like, sooner or later, there's going to be a hook here, right? I'm going to find something.
Yeah.
Well, then you end up meeting a Christian.
A cyber meeting. This was all
through. You met somebody online.
I was going to school online.
Who showed you Jesus Christianity.
Yes. I was going to school online. I was taking a computer class, and we had to do some assignments with a classmate, and I started talking to this guy that isn't even from around here. He's from Texas, and...
this is a crazy story. Are you going to tell the story?
I'll tell the story.
Okay, you got to tell the part.
The first time I saw, he was like, oh, I just took this trip. You can look at pictures on, like, Facebook or MySpace or something. And I went and looked, and this is how I found out he was a Christian. He had something right on there that said, like, a Christian dad. And I was like, oh, no.
One of those.
Okay, I know how I'm going to, you know, we will talk about school, and that is all. We did work on schoolwork, and we kind of struck up a friendship, and he would say a couple little things here and there, and I was kind of, but just from him being really a friend, and I was going through some hard times at that point, and he just listened to me and was a friend and wasn't pushing his beliefs on me, pushing this, you know, pushing God on me. He wasn't doing that. He was just being there and being a friend.
Wow.
And I remember at one point I said something about, we were getting into a really deep conversation, and I said, I just feel lost and searching. I just feel like there's something missing in my life. And he said, it sounds like there's a God-shaped hole in your heart. And I'll remember that. Mm. I got chills when he said that, but then at the same time I went, no. And
I said, uh-oh.
Because
you knew, right? So tell us about he tells you about a church.
He tells me about, well, he tells me, yeah, about his church that's in Texas and how it's great. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool church. I might go if I live there, but there's nothing like that around here. And we're talking really late one night, and he tells me about this. He's like, hey, there's this one of the pastors at my church, I think, moved somewhere to Chicago. And it was Larry Boatwright. And he said, yeah, he's a cool guy. I should, you know, look up sometime and see what church he's at. It's probably nowhere near you. And so I think he looked up on Facebook or something, I don't know, but he somehow found out that, oh, he's at this church called The Orchard, and I'm thinking, okay, fine, it's going to be, you know, way far away, I'll go check it out.
You're like an hour away, sometime, so, yeah. Right? Like, that's
yeah,
safe.
You know, it's going to be downtown Chicago. It'll be something that's no big deal. And then we look it up, and it's he goes, oh, it's in Aurora, Illinois. Do you know where that is? And I happened to be working and living in Aurora at the time. And I was like, oh, okay. And I told him, okay, fine, I'll go. I'll go one time, more like to get him to leave me alone. Okay, I'll go. And I had said, I want to know what this church is about. I want to know really, you know, everything about them.
Well, let me just say, like, so Jenny, she shows up, and I remember meeting you for the first time, and you were very kind of a little bit you were very nice, but a little bit standoffish. And what you said, this was really cool. I forgot about this till just now. We were doing, the week you showed up, we were talking about the tithing challenge, right?
No, that was a couple weeks later.
Was it a couple weeks later?
The week I showed up was the series called About.
Okay.
And I had
Which was a series about the orchard.
Right. Yeah. I had been talking to my friend on the phone on the way here, and I had actually said, I want to know what this church is about. Mm. And then I get here, and I get the little thing, and it says About. And I was like,
That was the most...
okay.
See, that was the most creative sermon series title, About. It's about the orchard. But see, that might have been just for huh? Yeah.
And I learned what it was about, and I left, and I said, well, maybe I'll go back next week.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I came back the next week, and I came in, and I went to the bathroom, and I stood in the stall in the bathroom for a couple minutes going, what am I doing here? What am I doing? I'm just going to leave. And a little voice said, just go in and check it out. And then it was the third service was the tithing challenge.
So we did this tithing challenge where we challenged people to begin tithing for 3 months. And Jenny comes up to me that day, I think it was that weekend, and she says, you know, I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to do a church challenge. And I'm going to commit to coming to church for 3 months. We'll just see what happens. And, oh, wow, that's hitting me a lot.
Yeah.
Here you are, and this journey, it's been amazing what God has done in your life. And it's been cool to watch because I think you were trying to figure out, is this for real?
Oh, yeah.
And where's the finger pointing? Where's the,
when is that finger going to come out?
Yeah, exactly. And what would you say, if you could just summarize maybe what you feel like God has done in your heart? Because you're still facing some real challenges, and you're still, there's still things that are, you know, brokenness that you're working through and pain. Yeah. But what would you say, if you were to summarize, like, your time here over these last several months, what has God done in you? And what do you feel like is a theme that just seems to...
I think God has shown me, and I've really feel it strongly here, that I don't have to be perfect. Not only do I have to not be perfect, it's okay to come to God just as I am. I'm broken. I'm hurting. I've done things I'm not proud of. I've done things that I felt that God would never forgive me for. And I don't have to have this perfect life. I don't have to fix my life before I come back to God. I was able just to come to him broken.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And that's part of the journey, and it's part of
And you are getting baptized. You're getting baptized today. You mentioned earlier you've been listening to this book called
The Ragamuffin
Gospel by Brennan Manning. And I just noticed, like, the book is, somebody's got the book sitting right there.
Yep.
Isn't that funny?
He's reading it too.
Yeah. That's a great book, by the way. If you guys have never read Brennan Manning, you should go order Brennan Manning and read it. It will wreck your heart, and it will free you, and it'll paint a whole new picture of how God sees you in your life. Listen, Jenny, we're really honored that you've come here to the Orchard and given God a chance work in your life, and given the Orchard a chance to show you that this is a safe place, and that we are not interested, and we've said this many times, that our job is not to change anyone, because we can't. And the minute we think we can change someone, we become judgmental. And all we can do is love people and accept them for where they're at and allow the Holy Spirit to begin to do his work in your life. And he is doing his work in your life. And I want to thank you for sharing today, and I think a lot of people are so connecting with your story. Thank you. Well, Tim, This is another one. How many of you guys remember Tim? We had a little video that we showed a while back. Tim, man, you just have a great story. What I want to jump to, you know, you showed up here because a friend invited you. You sent me a message on Facebook one day, which I'm never really good at getting back with people on Facebook, but I finally did. And you said to me, I'm looking for a church. Because there's just a lot of stuff going down in your life at that time. And you said, I'm looking for a church. I'm really into music. And I was like, you know, you might like The Orchard. We got some good tunes here. And so you show up, and God just begins to do some pretty great things in your life. Your words that you wrote down were, number one, courage, taking that first step to turn back to God. The second one was obedience, inviting God to move in your life and actually listening to and acting upon what he's done. That's one that I think really sticks out to me because I've seen that in you. Can you talk about that for just a second?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple stories that hit, you know, pretty hard right off the bat. I was going through a tough time and struggling with some things, you know, drinking too much, and that's kind of what brought me back here in the first place. And I immediately asked God, because I was a little bit leery at first. I said, God, you know, if you're with me, can you please just show me some kind of sign so I know? And it was a random Sunday, and I was one of those, like, clean out an old random box day that I've had with me for 12 years, and, you know, I was going through some things in there, reminiscing a little bit, and I stumbled across this green notebook that I had when I was a senior in high school, and it was my English notebook, and I ended up becoming an English teacher, so I'm looking through this book and seeing some of the poems that inspired me to fall in love with literature. And I'm thumbing through, and then I get to what I think is the end, and I keep on thumbing through blank pages, and at the very end of this notebook is a letter that I wrote to myself as an 18-year-old. And the letter was all about how I was heading down this path now, starting to experiment with alcohol and, you know, even drugs a little bit. And the letter was basically 18-year-old Tim giving advice to 31-year-old Tim about how, you know, you can do this, it's your choice. And from that moment on, I was like, I'm in. You know, I think that you could write it off as a strange coincidence, but I asked God to show me that he knew, or he was there for me. And I sat there with a dropped jaw and goosebumps, just thinking to myself, wow, this is definitely a big sign here. And that was when I decided to say, I'm ready to listen, I'm ready to obey you, and whatever you put in my heart, I'm ready to listen.
Well, I'll tell you, Tim, like, your openness to God has been amazing for me to watch. And I would say obedience is such a great word for you to use. I'm of the belief, and I think sometimes in the church, the church in general tries to define what spiritual maturity looks like. And that can be hard to define in some ways. But I think if you were to define spiritual maturity, I think it really comes down to your rate of obedience. How quickly are you willing to obey God? And what I've seen in you over and over again is this willingness to, almost like you don't know anybody, you're just going to obey God because that's what you're supposed to do. And I mean, one thing after another. I mean, you've gotten involved, you're serving here in the church, you're involved financially here at the Orchard, you just engage. And but one area that you've obeyed God in is in the area of forgiveness. Can you just tell us, because isn't following Christ begins to affect every part of your life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us, though, about that and what you've kind of been learning about forgiveness.
Well, there was one weekend where my mom and I were talking a lot about some issues we had going on in my family. And my mom and I are always the ones who try to keep everyone together. My sister and brother were fighting a lot. It was really breaking us down. I was getting frustrated with my mom because of the other situation. And I was being really mean to her. And I hated myself. And it was the weekend we were playing How He Loves Us, and I was playing the drums that weekend. Janelle was singing that weekend and just completely broke down, melted my heart. I was a wreck back there playing the drums. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope nobody can see up here as I'm like sobbing, you know? Felt like such a dork. But in that moment, God just put a message in my heart. And I don't know how to explain this. This has happened a couple times to me, but bam, there it was. It was in my heart. Soon as you get out of here, you have to call your mom and you have to ask her to forgive you for the way that you've been treating her.
Wow.
And I was just like, okay, this is what I got to do. It was hard for me to do, but I got in the parking lot, called my mom and just said, hey, mom, I'm just really sorry for the way I've been acting. It's all this other stuff that's been eating away at me, and I just want you to know that I love you, and I apologize, and I'm sorry for the way I've been acting. And, you know, she, of course, couldn't even say anything back because she was just so happy to hear those words from me. And forgiveness is something that I've learned a lot about. The weekend that you talked about the five steps of how to ask for forgiveness, there was one other time around January where I was at probably like the lowest point. I just felt so broken. I was lonely, depressed. I wasn't connecting with anybody, not going on any dates. I just felt so alone. And I felt God again moving in my heart, and I felt I need to do something about this. So I asked you for a meeting, and I came in here and we prayed, and I started out by praying, and then you gave me some great advice, and at the end you prayed. And you said, God, please give Tim the wisdom to know where he's supposed to go. That was on Thursday, New Year's Eve. Sunday night, I was laying in bed trying to fall asleep. And again, I don't know how to explain this, and it might even sound a little weird, but there it was in my heart. God told me that I needed to contact some of the women I had dated in the past and ask them to forgive me for ways that I had mistreated them. Wow. And I thought to myself, well, this is going to be interesting, you know? Okay.
That sounds like a reality show right
there. It was so weird. But I struggled with it the whole next day. I got home Monday from work. I found them all on Facebook. My high school girlfriend I had not talked to in 10 years. And sent him a message and just said, hey, I know this is going to sound weird. I found this church. I've turned back to God. God sent me a message in my heart that I need to ask you to forgive me for when we were dating. And
which that takes a lot because, you know, I mean, you know, it could be like, oh, this guy's pulling out the God card, right? Like, oh, God, this and that.
Yeah, it was...
So you met, you send them these emails.
Yeah, it was really uncomfortable, and I had to send it to four. And by Wednesday, three of them had already replied back, like, oh my gosh, don't even worry about it. And they actually ended up apologizing to me, too. Mm. Like, after I, you know, extended a hand and said, I'm sorry, they were like, oh, you know, I didn't always treat you well either. There was one, though, that I knew was going to be, you know, was going to be tough. And, well, long story short, didn't hear back from her for a really long time. 2 weeks ago, out of nowhere. Now, this was like way back in January I sent these messages. 2 weeks ago, she replies, and I couldn't believe it. Again, just melted my heart. She's like, hey, if you still want to talk, give me a call. And I called her. We talked for 2 hours. I told her about my journey and how I've changed. And at the end of the conversation, she just said, Tim, do you need me to say that I forgive you? And I said, yeah, that's exactly what I... And she said, well, Tim, I do forgive you, and, you know, it's okay. And, you know, right around the same time, I'm taking this big step this weekend. I feel God working. So.
Wow. It seems like God's bringing healing into your life on so many levels, and he's given you the courage to take those steps. And I just think that's very encouraging to all of us. And I know that there's a little bit of, like, I feel of conviction in my heart listening to you and watching you, because I think there's times that I don't, my rate of obedience isn't as quick as it should be. And I think there's some of us who maybe we would hear God say to do that, but a year would go by and we'd be going, man, I really do need to make that phone call. Or I really do need to take that step. And so that's just really inspiring. And don't lose that, because I think that's something really beautiful and something God wants in all of us, is just this willingness to obey. And this weekend you're getting baptized. This has to be a pretty big deal for you. What are your hopes going forward here?
Well, like you alluded to before, I think it's just time for Tim Piatek to start singing a new song. You know, I've been singing the old song for 12 years. It's really old. I'm sick of it. And I'm ready to just take some new steps. You know, I'm ready to... This is the next step in my journey. I'm ready to commit, and for so long I didn't show thankfulness and appreciation to God, and the step I'm going to take tonight I feel is really going to bring me closer.
Wow. Well, Tim, thank you. And all you guys, I just want to say, and I think I speak on behalf of everyone here, that we're really thankful for what God's doing in your lives. And we want you to know that we're for you, and we believe in you guys. And it's so evident that God's hand, yeah, amen. And so we're excited to celebrate with you as you guys take the step of faith this weekend. And I want to read this passage one more time, Psalm 40, verse 3. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. Thank you guys for being here. Let's give them one more hand clap. Thank you.